Number one, we'll learn this morning that circumstances do not control Christian behavior. That's important. Sometimes we talk about being under the circumstances, and I understand what that phrase means. I've been under the circumstances, but in some ways, Christians are not under the circumstances as though they were some sort of weight upon their shoulders. Sometimes God's people are above the circumstances. That is, in spite of what their culture is at that particular time, they learn to rise above it, to live within that framework, and to do an outstanding job for God and in His service of God. That God's people can, and I think this is important, that God's people can and have gone beyond themselves to do God's will. We limit ourselves in the work of God, not considering that the grace of God can be used by us to go beyond our means, to go beyond our strength, to go beyond our abilities, and perform a great work for God. What were the very most significant and impossible circumstances of the Corinthians at this particular time, or of the Macedonians, I should say, at this particular time in world history, is revealed to us. And considering their circumstances, we have to marvel that Paul was shaken, not in a bad way, but in a good way, that these people were able to perform what they did when he considered the circumstances under which those people were living at that particular time. He said, "You lived up far beyond my expectations." As I remarked last Sunday, anytime you surprise Paul by what you do, it must have been something that was really extraordinary. So let's look at these scriptures and try to learn something concerning the circumstances of life and the work of God. Paul wrote, "Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit," which simply means we must inform you, "of the grace of God." What does he mean by that? Paul introduces some of these principles and some of the facts by saying that it was only by the grace of God that these people were able to do the things they did. That is, the brethren who were in Macedonia. Paul said, "I want you to know, first of all, that I'm going to inform you of something that these churches did in Macedonia that really goes beyond their means, and they could not have done it without the grace of God being upon them. How he bestowed it upon the churches of Macedonia. How that in a great trial of affliction," that's the first thing Paul said, "there was something going on in Macedonia," where these churches were located, "that had dictated at that particular time that they were being afflicted. It was a trying time. They were undergoing suffering. They were undergoing poverty," literally, as we'll learn a little bit later. "But in every way and aspect of their life, you would have to say that this is the wrong time to ask for an offering. It's the wrong time, because these people are being afflicted. They're suffering. So I don't think it would be a good time to ask for an offering. But," Paul said, "in the abundance of their joy," in the abundance of their joy, that is, they had an overflowing joy within themselves that abounded in these congregations of the churches in Macedonia, that result, that was the motivating factor, In other words, here are people who are distressed, afflicted, undergoing trials. But at the same time, they have a super abundance of joy. And that's another good indication of a right relationship with God. If we can actually display a genuine joy under these circumstances, it speaks to us of having an abundance of the grace of God working in our lives. So the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty. Now the word deep here means the bottom of whether it's the ocean or whether it's a stream or whether it's a cave, whatever it is, this is the bottom. So they were on the bottom level of poverty. Not a good time to ask for an offering. When you're being afflicted, undergoing trials, and you're on the bottom level of poverty within that culture in which you live. But these people, there were two things that worked together that caused them to abound unto the riches of their liberality or their gift. One of them was the abundance of their joy and the poverty. And all of this abounded unto the riches of their liberality. Now stop and think about that. Look at it this way. When you have steam and you have fire, or rather you have water and you have fire, you have steam. These people had an abundance of joy in this trial of affliction, and they had deep poverty. But when those people put those two things together, their absolute absence of wealth and the joy that came because they understood the grace of God, when these two things were put together, the result was an offering for the poor saints of Jerusalem that went beyond the expectations of anyone, even themselves. I've received a lot of offerings in my life, but the ones that meant the most to me, not that I didn't appreciate any of them, because I have occasionally been the recipient of some financial help from people who were wealthy. I remember one time I couldn't pay a hospital bill, and it was due in 30 days, and I thought, I'm ruined. I'll never come up with it. Man, it's like $190. I think it's when Jeff was born. And that very week, people very well off called and said, we want to catch up on our giving. And they gave me a check for $500. But you know, I had some people in my congregation also that were poverty stricken, very poor people. And I've had them give me what they had. And they gave it with joy. And I received it with joy. Because I knew out of their need and out of their poverty, they were sharing things with me, such as eggs, things of that nature, that they really could have sold and helped themselves. So this is what made the gift so filled with the very nature of God Himself. For God so loved the world. I mean, we were the lowest inhabitants, if you please, on this planet. And yet God loved us. In the very depths of our sins and iniquity, God loved us. And even the scriptures tell us it is easy to love a person who loves you, but it's so difficult to reciprocate, not to reciprocate on those who hate you and despitefully use you, but as Jesus said, that we love them. So out of their superabundance of joy, and out of their deep poverty, they gave a gift for Paul to receive as he came to visit them and take with him to the poor saints at Jerusalem. So we can rise above our circumstances. I've always challenged people, especially a congregation of people, don't be stingy with God. If God blesses us and we can, let's give so that we can help the people of God, the missionaries, and everything that needs to be supported. Because, and here's my philosophy, you cannot outgive God. You cannot outgive God. And I'll get to that just a bit later. He states, For to their power, that is their capability, I bear record. Yes, and beyond their abilities, they were willing of themselves. There is the other secret to this, and that is they had a will. And that will was in them to accomplish something extraordinary, to show their love for these saints at Jerusalem. Now remember, there's another factor that we need to consider. The saints at Jerusalem were Jewish. The saints in Macedonia were Gentiles. They didn't love one another in the flesh at all. They despised one another. The Jews especially despised the Gentiles. They would do business with them, but they did not want to form friendships or interact with them in a way that was not any further than simple respect. But Paul set down a particular issue too. He said, look, you receive from the Jewish congregation in Jerusalem the gospel of Jesus Christ, by which you as unbelieving Gentiles were saved, and you were then set into the family of God by being born again. So if they shared the abundance of spiritual information with you so that you could enjoy the things of God, is it anything strange that you should now share the things of carnality, that is of the flesh, with them back at Jerusalem? So what Paul is saying, you ought to show your gratitude to them for preaching the gospel to you by giving abundantly for their relief. And I can't help but think a little bit like that, in the sense of that there was a congregation of people that endured through many hardships. The church that I went to and from whom I heard the gospel and received the information I needed to live for the Lord, they were established in, I think, 1858. I'm not sure. Maybe a little later. They had endured so many things. All of them that I know of, with the exception of one or two, were farmers, day workers. And yet they kept that congregation vibrant. They had some of the very best preachers that they could find and pay to come and preach the gospel and teach us the word of God. And I feel like I owed those people something in the sense of being thankful and grateful to them for having endured as they did so that I would have an opportunity to hear the gospel. So it's not unreasonable that I would not be willing to support them with whatever little finances I had as a boy, which I tried to do. Because here's what Paul said. Praying in verse 4 literally means to beg. Begging us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. That is, they begged us to come and visit the church and pick up this offering and carry it along with some other offerings from other churches as quickly as we could to the poor saints at Jerusalem. And Paul said, and this we did. And in other words, and this they did, not as we hoped, that is, we expected, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. Here is another key to liberality. Instead of giving to God in expectation, first give yourself to God. And then what you do for God will be more abundant. If you don't give yourself to God, it'll be difficult for you to give very much to God because you will not see the sense of it. I remember an incident Brother Goodwin told me one time, and I think probably had used it in a number of services, that he was baptizing a fellow who was in his 30s or 40s. And as usual in the running streams that we use for baptism in North Arkansas, it's pretty swift water. And some way Brother Goodwin didn't get him all down. And found out this fella had forgot to take his billfold out. And so they wrestled around, and he finally got him under. And Brother Goodwin then noticed, as he was trying to help him, that his billfold was in his pocket. And after services, he said, "You know, I'm really sorry I didn't tell you that you ought to take your billfold out, your watch off and things like this before I immersed you." And the fellow said, "Look, I wanted my pocketbook to be baptized too." Does that make any sense to you? He didn't take it out and leave it on the table. And that's a normal thing to do. But he said, "I don't resent it. Now my pocketbook's been baptized. That is, what I have in that is dedicated also to the glory of God." Paul said, "They begged us, insomuch that we desired Titus that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you the same grace also." Giving is a grace, the grace of giving. And I believe Brother Norman pointed out to me, well, if giving is a grace, and it is, then we ought to grow in grace. To which I said, amen. "Therefore, as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance," that is, in speaking and knowledge, what you know, "and in all diligence," that is, in getting things done, "and in your love to us, see that you abound in this grace also." In other words, they were outstanding in their faith, in the way they communicated, with the knowledge and their sincerity is what diligence means. "But in your love to us, see that you love us, and see that you abound in the grace of giving also." Now here's another fact I want you to catch. "I speak not by commandment." Isn't that strange? A lot of people speak by commandment when they try to teach their people to give and say there's a certain amount you ought to give or you ought not to be a member of this church. I remember a lady one time who was our landlady when I was at Forest City and First. She came out just fuming one day, met us out almost as we got out of the automobile coming home, and she was shaking a letter she'd gotten in the mail, and she was just infuriated. "I can't do this. This is just too much. I didn't know what had happened. What kind of letter did she get anyway that make her so angry and infuriate her?" Well, when she calmed down, she said, "This is from my church, and it's telling me how much I'm supposed to pay this year." You know, we don't do that, people. We don't have banquets where you promise how much you're going to give. I'm not laying anything on you by commandment, because love will do more than commandments. If I lay a commandment on you of a certain percentage and you do that, you'll say, "Now that's wonderful, I'm in God's will," but you may not be. It's got to come from your will. Now notice, I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of your love. Now this occasion is the starting place. I speak not by commandment, but I'm using this starting place of the forwardness or anxiety of others and to prove the sincerity of your love. Prove the sincerity of your love. Now you husbands, and I can speak as a husband, you don't need to buy your wife a roll of barbed wire on Valentine's Day. I did that one time. Took the paper out of it, cut it out in the form of a heart, and wrote, "I love you," and I gave her a roll of barbed wire. Because she wanted fence so that the cattle couldn't come in on our place. And that had bothered her. And I said, "Well, I'll string some barbed wire close to the fence." So that's what I gave her. A useful gift. Brooms are a useful gift. Don't give your wife one for her birthday. Or a new vacuum cleaner. Look beyond that. Prove the sincerity of your love. Give her some. I better not make too many suggestions. For you know, and this ought to break our hearts, verse 9. You have a knowledge of the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might be rich. There's the basis of our giving, people. The basis of what Christ did for us. Was he a poor person? No, he sat in the very Father's house. I mean, he was God. And he gave up every bit of that to come and walk among sinners, such as you and me. And by his impoverishing himself, the foxes have holes, the birds of the air hath nest, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. He didn't have a home. He didn't have a single thing that he could say, "This is mine." And yet he created all things. He didn't own a square acre of property, but he made the whole earth. He didn't have an ounce of gold, but he knew where every pound of it was stored. He didn't have title deed to anything that exists on this earth, the cattle on 1,000 hills, but he didn't have one. He labored in a furniture factory as a carpenter. Why did he do that? Because he loved us and he gave himself for us. There's the key again to the things we need to understand. And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient, that is necessary, who have begun before not only to do but also to be forward a year ago. In other words, they had begun this process even a year ago of taking offerings on the first day of the week. Let every one of you lay by him in stores. God has prospered him. Now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which you have. You planned for it. You knew you were going to do it. You knew what you ought to do. Now that you've made all these plans, you're ready to do it, just do what you must do. For if there be first a willing mind, and this is a very important concept here, it is accepted according to the man hath, and not according to that he hath not. If you don't have it, God doesn't expect it. If you have it, God expects it. That's what we're responsible and we'll answer to God for, what we have and not what we don't have, okay? In other words, if you don't have it, God's not going to judge you for not having it. But if you have it and don't do what you should with it, then that's a matter of judgment. It's fair. Here's what he said. For I mean not that other men be eased and you burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, and that is the abundance of the collection that they had taken. They hadn't suddenly come into riches. That their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be an equality. What does equality mean? Well, it means you're equal. What he's saying is, I'm not laying a burden on this congregation or the congregations in Macedonia that I'm not laying on all the other congregations. I'm not just singling you out to lay this whole burden upon you. But now these verses are very important. As it is written, he that had gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. What's he talking about? He's talking about manna and the children of Israel. He said, just gather enough for what you need. And if you gather more than you need, you can't put it in the bank. You can't put it in a zip bag and put it in the refrigerator. When you try to hoard it, it's going to rot on you. So all you need to do, and on one day you can gather enough for the Sabbath. What's this provision? God will provide. But if you hoard, God can turn what you have hoarded into ashes. This is not what I have thought up. But just think about what God has said. Now, I thank God, but thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you. For indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being more forward of his own accord, he went unto you. And we have sent him with the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. In other words, we're taking care of this. And not that only, but who was also chosen of the churches to travel with us, with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord and declaration of your ready mind. Avoiding this, and this is important, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us. And that is, we're not going to let this be in any way tainted by your not knowing that this went where you meant for it to go. Providing, verse 1, for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And that's always been our policy when it comes to your money that is in this congregation. We have made provision for honest things. That is, we give an account for every cent that is given to this congregation. And it's not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. In other words, we can't just simply say, well, God knows that we're honest. God knows we're using the money where you designated for it to go. God knows we're putting this where it ought to go. So be satisfied with that. Not only that, we're going to give you a sheet of paper that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt, according to the offerings that I received, that this money was well spent and went where it should go. Paul calls that being honest with the Lord and honest with men. And in anything that has to do with money, there has to be absolute honesty and absolute integrity. Paul said, we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oftentimes proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent upon the great confidence which I have in this fellow helper concerning you, or our brethren be inquired of. They are the messengers of the churches and the glory of Christ. these people that are carrying this offering, their reputation is so impeccable that their honesty and integrity brings glory to Christ. That is so different many times to what the so-called institutions that hide how much money they have. Back in the 60s, one of the most famous evangelists that we have had in America had taken out of the offerings for his ministry and put in the bank $50 million. This was never reported because they put it back and never reported it anymore because they were afraid people would quit giving. So they didn't want people to quit giving, so they stuck this back as an unreported resource. We don't have unreported resources. We're going to be honest with you. We're not going to hide anything. So I can ask you to give without reservation. And I'm asking you to consider what all the principles were that were involved in these things this morning. You read them at home. You get the full import of this chapter. Read chapter 9. That's what I'll be speaking to you on Sunday week. Brother Matt will be here next Sunday. Then the next Sunday I'll finish this series of messages. Hope by then you'll be poverty stricken. No, I won't leave you enough to make your car payment, really, so you can get here to give your offering. We have perfect liberty. We have a will. We have our own judgments to make. And to me, that has always been the principle by which the congregations where I've been have always had what I would speak of as superabundance to do all the things that needed to be done. I've spoken more about giving and money these past 3 weeks or so than I have probably in the last 20 years, maybe longer than that.